Hello, everyone, and welcome to another aviation industry update from MITRE's Knowledge Driven Podcast. Today, I'd like to welcome Bob and Michael again.
Thanks, Cameron. My name's Bob Brentz. I'm a systems and aerospace engineer here at MITRE.
And thanks, Cameron and Bob. My name's Michael Wells. I am an economist and a transportation analyst working at MITRE. I work in the transportation transformation. That's a bit of a mouthful.
Thank you for being here to share the aviation industry update with us. The last time we sat down was back in June, and the topic of the day was COVID's impact on air travel. Can we assume that's going to be a big part of the discussion this time as well?
Yeah, Cameron, that's definitely the case. We can certainly share some other new and exciting things that are happening, but it's really hard to escape the overall impact that pandemic is having on aviation right now.
Well, let's start with that then. What is the current impact of the pandemic on air traffic? I thought I was hearing that passenger flights were coming back, but then they weren't. Is that right?
Cameron, both of those statements are kind of true to some degree. So to recap a little, April was a really bad month for U.S. airlines. In fact, airlines worldwide, really. With passenger boardings in the U.S. dropping below 5% of what they were last year. But passengers slowly started returning during May and June as summer approached, got up to about 25% of last year's levels. And then they kind of plateaued in July. And passenger numbers today are still only about one third of what we would normally see. But what may be misleading, what I think you were referring to, however, is that in the early summer and then kind of into the fall is when airlines saw passengers starting to return. They announced increases in their schedules, right? They said, great, passengers are coming back. We're going to increase our schedules. But when those bookings didn't materialize, the airlines would then cut back those same schedules a few weeks before departure. And frankly, we've seen this pattern of kind of cautious optimism on the part of the airlines, followed by reducing their published schedules at the last minute, continuing through the summer and the fall.
Yes, and I'd also heard there were layoffs a couple of months ago. Did that have anything to do with there being no additional stimulus money from the government?
Great question. Again, yes and no. Most passenger airlines applied for and received grants under the CARES Act back in the spring. I think all of these airlines would likely say that these funds have helped keep them going during a period of extremely low demand. But accepting funds from the CARES Act came with a couple of requirements. One of those strings was that airlines accepting CARES assistance could not involuntarily lay off or furlough their employees. However, this requirement only went through the end of September. The airlines knew that they were likely to have to downsize before then, and they tried to do this in the best way possible. What most of the passenger airlines did was start offering early retirements and voluntary buyouts to their employees in order to reduce their payrolls before October and hopefully avoid layoffs. For the most part, the airlines were successful. It appears that somewhere around 50,000 airline employees accepted those buyouts over the summer. Unfortunately, for a few airlines, it wasn't enough, and they were forced to lay off or furlough about another 30,000 staff at the beginning of October.
Yeah, and please correct me if I get this wrong. I heard that it was maybe something like a reduction of 80,000 employees. Does that sound right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, it's about 50,000 over the summer and about 30,000, kind of that happened in October. And that is a pretty big number. Just to put it in context, we looked at the airline filings with the U.S. Department of Transportation, and it translates for U.S. major passenger airlines, that translates to about 20% of their workforce. Compared to like before the pandemic hit. So yeah, that's a pretty significant number.
That reduction sounds a little odd because I think you mentioned there were a couple requirements for accepting federal support and then also some other requirements around maintaining service level. Am I right?
Yeah, that was the other requirement from the CARES Act that with some exceptions, scheduled airlines that accepted CARES money were required to continue service to the airports they were serving before the pandemic hit. And so looking at the data, we in fact did see that the number of airports served actually remained fairly steady both pre and post pandemic. There was a slight drop, but again, there was some exceptions allowed under the CARES Act. So that's understandable. What we weren't sure about though is whether we would then see a big drop in the number of airports served after September when those service requirements also expired with the CARES Act.
I mean, I gotta ask, did we see that?
Actually, no. The number of airports served by carriers remained about the same even after September 30th. This was kind of surprising. considering we've been hearing talk about how airlines might want to drop a number of their so-called thin markets starting in October. But that doesn't mean there haven't been changes in routes and destinations. We have seen a number of airlines trying out different nonstop service in an attempt to capture more leisure passengers. In particular, airlines that specialize in point-to-point service like Southwest and JetBlue have been adding service to airports that you might have previously avoided as too crowded.
That's interesting. Does that mean that these low-cost, I guess they're point-to-point airlines, might be better positioned to deal with the pandemic? Or at least compared to like big carriers who have to deal with the network across the entire country?
Yeah, Cameron, we've been hearing that. I mean, you kind of hear people saying that, but I think we honestly need to see a bit more data to actually know for sure. One argument in favor of the low-cost airlines is that they're better positioned to capture, kind of price-sensitive leisure travelers. And these are people that may be going to visit relatives or just trying to get away to an isolated vacation spot for a few days off. We know travel's still down, but business travel is down much more than leisure travel. And so the argument is that the low-cost airlines can capture more of this leisure market. But on the other hand, the beauty of actually having an airline network, which is based on kind of this hub and spoke model, is that the airlines can actually collect passengers together at the hub airport and then basically, get enough people on flights to make them somewhat economically viable. And that's really important now with demand so low. And, if you look at the data we saw early in the summer and the spring, we've definitely seen the major network carriers running more traffic through their hubs and actually less point-to-point service over the last few months. So I think, the data is still, we still need to see more data on kind of how this shakes out over the next few months.
Yeah, and I mean, everything we've just been talking about, as crazy as it is just passenger travel. What about cargo? I'm thinking places like FedEx or UPS or maybe even Amazon. I've definitely ordered a lot more things online lately, and I imagine others have as well.
Cameron, that's a great observation, and you're absolutely right. In the U.S., at least, domestic cargo, measured by pounds shipped, is up, as are the number of cargo flights. We actually took a look at what was happening with e-commerce this year, and the data show that online sales have grown twice as fast in 2020 as they did last year. U.S. e-commerce sales by dollar value are on track for about a 30% increase over last year, compared to about 15% growth in 2019. And just looking at e-commerce, Amazon is by far the largest online retailer and accounts for roughly 40% of U.S. online product sales.
Speaking of Amazon, I heard there might be, and again, I don't follow the news too closely, but I heard there might be some noteworthy news about Amazon.
Yeah, as many people are no doubt aware, Amazon's actually been working for a number of years to make drone delivery a reality. Drone delivery meaning delivering some of your Amazon packages to your door by using these small unmanned aircraft. But the news is that at the end of August, at the end of the summer, Amazon got one step closer to this goal when the FAA granted them what's known as a Part 135, that refers to the part of the regulations, air carrier certificate. And this essentially means that they've met the requirements to operate as a small airline. What it doesn't mean, though, is that they will immediately start delivering packages all over the country. I mean, first they need to test their procedures, demonstrate in a real-world setting that they can perform specific types of operations safely and at some degree of scale to convince the FAA that they can do this safely at scale.
Given that it sounds like there's going to be a lot of testing, do we know where Amazon's going to start these tests? And are they going to be delivering to my house anytime soon?
Well, it depends on where you live. I can't answer if they're going to be delivering to your house or not, Cameron. But we do. We don't really know the answer to either one of these questions. There's some news reporting that suggests that in North America, Amazon might actually be planning to start their testing in Seattle, Washington, and Vancouver, British Columbia. And actually, it is worth clarifying a little bit, or pointing out that actually Amazon was not the first company interested in drone delivery to receive a Part 135 certification. That honor actually goes to two other companies, Alphabet Wing, which is a subsidiary of Google, and then UPS, both just about a year ago.
Really interesting to hear. I got asked, do we know about any other retailers who are interested in doing drone delivery? I think a lot of people know that Amazon's one of the largest online retailers, but are there any, I guess, smaller retailers who are in the game?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the second largest player in e-commerce in the United States is actually Walmart, although their roughly 6% share of the online market seems small by comparison. And yes, Walmart is actually experimenting with drone delivery too. Unlike Amazon, though, they're not currently planning on running their own fleet of drones, but rather they're currently working with a number of partners who specialize in this already. Speaking for the two of us, we are definitely going to be keeping an eye on all of these companies to see how this progresses.
Well, I think you guys shared a lot of really interesting stuff. Is there anything else we should keep in mind going forward?
Thanks, Cameron. I appreciate the opportunity to do this. I would just say, if people are interested in aviation, keep your eye on the news because there's a lot of things changing with the pandemic and with technology. And we're definitely, as Bob said, we're definitely going to be keeping an eye on these things. And we look forward to maybe doing one of these podcasts with you in the near future.
Yes, Cameron. Thanks for having us.
Yes, I'd like to say, obviously, thank you to MITRE and the Knowledge Driven Enterprise for giving us a place to share this incredible content. And as always, thank you, Bob and Michael. It's always a pleasure to learn more from you about the aviation industry and all the amazing things that they're up to.
Thank you, Cameron.
Yep. Thanks very much, Cameron.